Good morning. Well, I like this morning. This is Arkansas come to South Texas. I like it. Maybe you've heard of Sir Alfred Nasseri. Does that name ring a bell to anybody? It will in just a moment, probably, at least to some of you. His real name is Mirhan Karimi Nasseri. He's a 62-year-old Iranian who has been living in Terminal 1 of Paris's Charles de Gaulle Airport since August 26, 1988. True story. If you don't know this story, it's an incredibly fascinating story. Let me tell you a little about it. In 1977 is when the intrigue of his life started. After studying in England, he returned to his home, Iran, and was expelled for protesting against the Shah. He was expelled, interestingly, without a passport. And I don't know if you begin to understand what that might mean, but this guy's in trouble. He began a quest for recognition in Europe for political asylum as a refugee. And for nearly 4 years, he wandered around and was refused entry into every European country. Until finally in 1981, Belgium agreed to grant his request for political asylum. And Belgium's agreement allowed him now to seek asylum in other European countries. He evidently didn't want to go to Belgium. In 1986, he decided to go to Britain, hoping to find relatives there because he claimed that his mother was from there. And en route, his briefcase containing what documentation he did have was stolen from him in a Paris subway. But somehow he managed to board a plane for London anyway. And when he got to Heathrow, they wouldn't allow him into London, so they put him on a plane and sent him back to Paris, to Charles de Gaulle, because he had no documentation. Upon his return, he was arrested for illegal entry. And since he had no documents, there was no country of origin that they could deport him to. And so they sent him back to the airport. He took up residence in Terminal 1, and a little red plastic bench became his home. They sent him to a holding area for travelers without papers, and the French court took up his case, and they ruled that since he had entered originally the airport legally as a refugee, he could not be expelled from it, but they could not force the country to accept him, and so France refused to accept him, and there he was, stuck in the airport. And so he has remained in the Paris airport since that time. Some of you may have read about this man. The airport staff has officially, or I guess I should say unofficially, adopted him. They give him food vouchers, pocket change, reading material, and he reads all day, every day. He wakes up at 5:30 each morning in order to shave in the men's restroom before passengers begin to arrive. He reads all day, and at night, he waits until all the airport stores are locked, and then he goes into the bathroom and brushes his teeth with toothbrush and toothpaste that are complimentary from an airlines. He rinses his clothes overnight in the bathroom and hangs them out and dries them as best he can. And he's known, among other things, for his impeccable honesty. On at least two occasions, he has found pocketbooks full of money and has turned them in. He walks often to the electronic doors of Terminal 1, and as the doors open up, he breathes that, I would say fresh air, but if you've been in Paris, it's not too fresh, but at least the outside air, as those doors swing open, but he never steps outside. It's a captivating story, but recent events make it even more captivating. On September 17, 1999, an international travel card and a French residency permit were delivered into Nasseri's hands. And with them, he's now free to leave the airport, take up residency in France, or apply to other countries. But there's something interesting that's taken place. He refuses to sign that documentation because they list his nationality as Iranian, and he claims to be British. And so he won't sign the documentation. He can now go wherever he chooses in Europe, but the problem is he no longer wants to. And let me add just another level of intrigue here. In 2004, Steven Spielberg made a movie entitled The Terminal. And it just happened to have been on last night. Some of you may have seen it. It was on ABC last night. It was really kind of shocking to me to have prepared this lesson and then sat down last night, and there the movie was. It was on. It's not very factual regarding his life because they said it in JFK, and this guy's rescued at the end by one of the stewardesses on an airline. Tom Hanks stars in it. But it is at least somewhat generally based on the life of Nasseri. DreamWorks, Spielberg's movie company, paid him reportedly somewhere between $250,000 and $300,000 for the rights to his story. And so he's no longer indigent, but he continued to live in Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris, France. It's an incredibly bizarre story. It's also overwhelmingly sad. The French lawyer who took an interest in him and assisted him in his struggle during these years is quoted as saying, "The sad truth is, after fighting for years to leave the airport and apply for citizenship elsewhere, Nasseri was afraid to do so when the opportunity arose. Now, he says, I think he will stay in the airport until he dies." The airport's medical director, Dr. Philippe Bargain, says he's scared to leave this bubble world which he's been living in. Now, I stumbled across this story some time back and became intrigued in it and have been kind of following this story, this man. And at some point in my research, it occurred to me this man's life is a microcosm of some of our lives, some of the lives of some people that I know that are Christians. Let me explain. Some of us have focused on our problems so long that those problems have become our life. They define us, who we are and what our world is about. Some of us have had some really serious problems in our life. And I've not been here long enough to know your story, nor you to particularly know mine. But I know in an audience this size that there are some who have been abused in childhood. I know that there are some who have been molested, maybe, even in childhood. There are some who've been abandoned, or you've been betrayed in some way. There are some who suffer, or have suffered, at least, from some serious health problems. Maybe a marriage that's miserable, or children that have rebelled, or trust that has been betrayed, or loneliness, or the death of a beloved spouse. Or maybe it's just dealing with the fact that we're growing older and we have to deal with all the realities associated with that. Life has dealt some of us some really, really hard blows. Some of which we didn't deserve. We didn't do anything to deserve those things. Or maybe it was something we did, and now we're suffering some painful consequences. And rather than moving on in our lives, we just got stuck right there. We didn't move on any further. And that problem, or that series of problems, now defines our life. and we can't get beyond it. And while other people around us, while their life moved on, ours just stayed right there. And that's where we are. And some have grown really angry and really bitter. And just keep rehearsing that hurt over and over in our minds and in our lives. And as much as we will vehemently deny it, we have now chosen this world in which we live. And all the while we'll say that is not true. But it is. It is. If you've chosen to become stuck at a particular point of difficulty in your life, then this is a life that you have chosen to live. And there's only one way that we can move on from here. It's in the passage that was read a few moments ago in our hearing of Philippians chapter 3. And I'd like for you to turn there. Philippians chapter 3. I want you to notice the determinations that guide Paul's life at this point. If you look back and think about the Apostle Paul, you know that he kept moving on in his life, didn't he? But what would his life have been like had he gotten stuck back at certain points of difficulty? Was he ever treated unjustly? Were there things that happened to him in his life that he didn't deserve, that he could have become bitter about? Certainly there were. If ever there was someone. I mean, someone who's been beaten and shipwrecked and in prison and gone hungry and without clothes and all that thing that he listed, all that list in 2 Corinthians, that list of things that happened to him, he didn't deserve those things. And yet he didn't allow his life to become stuck at those points, did he? He kept moving on. And notice the encouragement that he gives to these Christians here in Philippians chapter 3. In verse 12, he says, in essence, I am not going to stay where I am for the rest of my life. Not that I've already arrived or obtained all this or have already been made perfect. He says, I'm moving out from here. If you'll go back and pick up the context, we only picked up a portion of it in our reading, but he's talking about the value of coming to know Christ in the prior paragraphs before this. Talks about how wonderful it is to get to know Jesus. And he said, I haven't arrived. But I'm not staying here. He says, I press on. He says it in verse 12. He says it again in verse 14. I press on. And that's the only way that we're going to get unstuck in our lives. We have to make a determination. This is not where I want to die. This is not where I want to end up, where I am right now. I don't want to live the rest of my life with these feelings that I have. And you've got to make that determination, because in order to change your life, in order to not stay stuck in that place where you may be stuck in your life, the first thing you have to do is say, I don't want to die here. This is not the way. I don't like this life. I don't like these feelings. I want to move on from here. And that's the second thing. You've got to make up your mind. I'm going to move out. I'm not staying here. I'm moving from here. And maybe at the moment when you make that decision, you don't know where it is that you're going, but you make up your mind, I'm not going to stay here. I'm not going to die here. And that's your choice. Nobody else can do that for you. You have to make that choice. And then verse 13, in order to move ahead and put this behind you, he says, you have to forget what is behind. Forgetting what is behind. And this word, and the definition of the word forget, may help us in other areas also. The word forget here means to escape notice or to not allow something to unduly influence me. It doesn't mean that it's gone from my mind. It means that I make up my mind that I'm not going to let this rule my life. This is not going to be the defining thing in my life from this time on. And so I'm putting this behind me. I'm forgetting this. I'm not going to allow this to have the influence over my life that it's had up to this point. And one of life's realities is nobody can make you leave the terminal. If you want to stay in the terminal, nobody can make you leave. You can live there, stuck, for the rest of your life if that's what you choose. And you can die there if that's what you choose. I know some folks who made that choice, don't you? I'm really, really sad for them. And some of those people were Christians. But they had something in their life that they made up their mind, I can't get beyond this. I can't get over it. And they couldn't. Because they told themselves, this is too big. And they let that define their life from that time on. And Paul realized that you can't make somebody leave the terminal. Look at the verses that follow, the first part of verse 15. And I want you to put these phrases together and ask yourself, what is Paul, what's he trying to do with these people? What is his point in these phrases here? 15a, all of us who are mature should take such a view of things. Verse 17, join with others in following my example, brothers. Chapter 4, verse 1, therefore, my brothers, you whom I love and long for, my joy, my crown, this is how you should stand firm in the Lord, dear friends. What's he trying to do here? He's standing outside the terminal. The doors are open, and he is saying, come out. That's what he's saying. He is encouraging them to come out because you have to make that step. He can't go in there and grab you and drag you out and make you live outside the terminal. It's a choice you make. And Paul, with these words, is trying to persuade them, encourage them. One of the consequences of living in the terminal is that we like to talk about Christianity, but when the opportunity comes to put it into practice, we find that we don't really want to. And if you live in the terminal very long, you'll find out some really interesting things that happen to you. And one of them is, it will rob you of your desire if you stay there long enough. You won't want to when the opportunity comes. You know, have you noticed in life that there are some things that are really important to you in your life, and for some reason, you're put in a situation where you can't do those things. Let's just take something, if you like to play golf, or if you like to fish, or if you like to hunt, and you're put in some situation where you can't do that for a prolonged period of time, you know what will happen to you? You'll get to where it's not important to you. You'll get to where, even when you have the opportunity, you won't take it. You won't do it. That's an interesting thing about life. If you stay stuck, if you allow yourself to stay stuck in the terminal, then when the time comes for you to put your Christianity into practice, you won't have this deep fire inside of you. You won't have this burning desire. You'll get to the point where you like to talk about winning souls, and you like to talk about teaching others or teaching a Bible class, but when the opportunity comes along, you find out all of a sudden you're afraid. And you don't want to do it anymore. As someone used to say, your get up and go has what? Got up and gone. It's not there anymore. And once you've made that decision, your life becomes focused. Once you've made the decision to live in the terminal, your life becomes focused on why you can't do this. And why you can't do that. It's really interesting to talk to Christians who immediately, quickly, consistently become defensive about why I'm not doing this and why I'm not doing this and why I'm not doing this. That's what our life becomes. That becomes a focus of our life. It's what we think about. What am I going to say when somebody comes up to me and asks me to teach a Bible class? What reason am I going to have? And our life becomes focused around those things. And we get to the point that we don't even see the opportunities anymore. Sir Alfred, he got what he said he wanted, but he won't sign the papers. Why? And I want you to listen to this. It really doesn't matter why. If you're looking for an excuse, one excuse is good as the other. So just pick the first one that comes along. We could talk a long time about why he doesn't want that freedom that he talked about for so long, that he fought for so long. But in the end, it really doesn't matter why. It only matters to him why. Do you understand what I'm saying? When you stand before God, you can talk about why. Lord, didn't we do this and didn't we do this and I was afraid. It really doesn't matter at that time. The only thing that matters is, did you do it or did you not do it? The opportunity was there. You said you wanted it. You fought for it. And it was there. It was presented to you. And you didn't take it. Why? What difference does it make? Because this matter is so very important in our lives that it really is beside the point to spend our time talking about why. There are lots of whys. And fear is one of those big whys. But what difference does it make? If you, whatever it is that you allow to come between you and serving God with your whole heart, God will overcome every obstacle in your life that keeps you from moving ahead in your Christian walk, except one. And that is saying, I don't want to. Is that true? Be real careful. I think that's true. But then I remember something. I remember a barefoot Moses standing before this bush that was burning, and he gave all these whys, and God kept overcoming those whys, didn't he? Until he got down to one, and he said, I don't want to. And the Bible said God became angry. You can read the story for yourself. It's in Exodus chapter 3 and 4. But even though God was angry, there's some good news here. He didn't give up on Moses at that point, did he? And even though he had said, I don't want to, then God even worked with him in that, didn't he? And you know why that's important? Because there's been some times in my life when I've said, I don't want to. The Lord put an opportunity in front of me and I said, Lord, I don't want to. And I'm thankful that God didn't just walk away. That he helped me work through even the don't want to. You ever had the don't want to's? Now you're pretty close to the edge. That makes God angry. But God hasn't given up on you yet. And if you're stuck in this terminal and you're just saying, well, you know, I have all these reasons and this happened to me and you just don't understand and you just that built your life around that, then you can stay there until you die, and some people will. They'll stay in the terminal and they'll die in the terminal. Now, for the sake of the integrity of this lesson, I have to tell you something. There has been a slight change in Sir Alfred's situation in the last year and a half. He became mentally ill in this process. Now, we could make a sermon out of that also, couldn't we? There's some other things that happened to you. And all of this worked on his mind so much that he became mentally ill, and they had to hospitalize Sir Alfred. And for a few months after they had him in the hospital, they put him in a hotel near the airport. And then on March the 6th, 2007, on a Monday, he was transferred to a Paris shelter for the homeless. And to my knowledge, that's where he still is today. And so I suppose that he won't die in the terminal. But because of insisting on living in the terminal, Then some things happened in his life that took his desire away, and that led to some other problems in his life. And I think I've seen some people with those kind of spiritual problems. That when you say, I don't want to long enough, and you just keep saying it because it's comfortable, then you develop problems in your life. And those problems lead to some serious, serious consequences. And so my question for you and for me this morning is, are you living in the terminal? You see, the doors are open. But some of us have allowed things that have happened in our life to cause us to become a prisoner in the terminal. And we're living in our own negative world that we choose to live in. The door is open. And there is someone who's standing outside who's saying, come to me. Come here to me. All you who are weary and you've got lots of burdens, come to me and I'll give you rest. Will you leave the terminal while we stand and sing?